Well, it's November 18th, 2023, and the time is 1927 hours Eastern Standard Time. Welcome. Good evening. Hi. Had the deluge not come when it did in our chronology? And in the year BCE 3282, precisely, the date of Adam and of Noah, they're two different dates, separated by quite a large number, would not have come at a time permitting the arrival of the Messiah in the sixth millennium. After the creation of Adam in BCE 5550. Now, I could talk about that number, 5550. It didn't mean anything to me particularly. I thought it was a rather just random number or a very, you know, arbitrary number until I eventually realized that it was 7 1/7 times 777. This is our blessed chronology, praise Jehovah. It works out that there are 2,268 years from Adam until the deluge, 2268. Then an identical period after that of 2268 years. And that number, 2268, is a remarkable number, as I discussed in some other articles. Until King Solomon's temple in BCE 1014, there's 2268 years after the deluge to get to 1014. The number 2268 is equal to 36 times 63, and there's more to it than this, but listen to this, or 6.3 times 360. This is a remarkable feature of this number, 2268. That's the number of radians, or which is 6.283, roughly, I believe, but it's also roughly 6.3. 6.28 is close to 6.3. The number of radians in a circle, 2 pi, in other words, multiplied by the number of degrees, 360 in a circle. Number of radians multiplied by the number of degrees. And taking the number, also then, taking the number 6.3 divided by 2 times pi, which is 6.28 because pi is 3.14, etc. It's a non-repeating decimal. But when we divide by 2 pi, 6.3 by 2 pi, it yields a number which, when raised to the power, it's a number close to 1, right? But it's a little bit larger than 1. And when we raise that number to the power of 360, remarkably, this gives a value for phi. And I discovered, this is my own personal discovery, which I don't know how or why I tried it, but I did. I discovered this. And phi is the golden ratio, of course. The number, the name of it is phi. It's been given the Greek letter phi to designate this number phi, which is 1.618, as we see. It's the number, phi is the number the inverse of which equals itself less 1. And it's roughly equal to 1.6180340. The value of phi obtained using the alternative method, we talked about phi earlier in this article. But the value of phi obtained using the alternative method described above, which we just described, is 6.3 divided by 2 pi to the power of 360. And we get the number. You need a very accurate calculator to do this. You can't use a calculator that uses some approximations to get something. A number raised to the power of 360 is not just any calculator will do that. I believe that's a correct statement on my part. This differs, though. The number we get is 1.617 when we do the calculation. I hope I did it correctly, but I think I did. I had to find a calculator that could do this online somewhere. 1.6, or maybe I was able to use one of my own calculators that I had in my computer. I can't remember how I did it, but 1.6172499. I mean, you can do it on your calculator. You can do it on your hand calculator. And it should be, it's probably, that's probably the way you can do it. That is probably going to give you a number. I don't really know what, I can't guarantee it, but it should give you a number that's close to this. This differs by 16 parts per million, 1.6172499, as compared to 1.6180340. Differs by 16 parts per million from the value of phi observed in the Great Pyramid's height-to-base ratio. The value of phi is observed in the Great Pyramid's height-to-base ratio, in other words, is what this says. And it's not exactly equal to the value of phi that we know is the correct value, but it is within 16 parts per million of this value that I calculated like this. Maybe the Egyptians calculated it by some method very similar or exactly like this method that I used to calculate it. I don't know. It's fascinating, and I don't know why it works either. I have no idea how I discovered it. And they are singing the song of Moses. To quote from Revelation 15 and 3, the slave of God in the song of the Lamb, saying, "Great and wonderful are your works, Jehovah God the Almighty. Righteous and true are your ways, King of eternity." And that concludes chapter 11 of the Born and Raised article. That's one of the most exciting aspects of all of this. I didn't make any other real discoveries in mathematics or anything during all the articles I wrote. This is the only mathematical discovery I made. And it was incredible. I mean, yeah, I'm still in disbelief. I can't really believe that. I'd forgotten it. I'd forgotten that I did it. It's just something I did. But it's remarkable to me now to look back also. I'm thrilled to death about it. Let's continue. Let's begin our scriptural study for today now. Well, we've already studied Revelation 15:3, but our proverb for today, little children, is Proverbs 19 and 3. It is the foolishness of an earthling man that distorts his way. So that's possible. We could use the wrong calculator and calculate something incorrectly. If we're foolish and we're fooled, instead of being careful and making sure of all things, we could be fooled, right? And that could distort our way, and therefore we could get distorted answers, and the answers might not be correct. And so his heart becomes enraged against Jehovah himself. When a man's way becomes distorted, this is talking about a particular form of distortion which causes the man's heart to become enraged against the true God, Jehovah himself. That's a very, I mean, they're all wonderful scriptures, but that is a very powerful, it's a very meaningful scripture, is it not? It's talking about why people get angry about Jehovah. And this is maybe only one reason why they get angry about Jehovah, but this is one example that is very possible, possibly enlightening to many of us. I find it very enlightening personally. Now let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 18. We're going to do that though in the Brenton version of the Septuagint, because that is the one where it doesn't include these controversial verses at the beginning and throughout later on too. There's a few more places. You can see that 17, 18, 19, those verses are missing. And from 20, where is it? Well, after 27, verse 30 is missing too. Well, if I look here, let's see. Where is it now? I've got it right here. That's it, 17, 18, 19. Okay, 9, 10, 11. 9, 10, and 11 are missing too. So let's read 1 Samuel 18 in the Brenton Septuagint. Shall we? Here we go. It's an online version from eBible. What is it? eBible.org. Okay. And there came out women in dances. This is after David slew Goliath. By the way, the shekel is the same. It's always the same. It's just a unit of weight. I was looking at the wrong footnote yesterday. And the spear was only about 25 pounds or something. I forget how many pounds it weighed. But it in shekels, I was looking at the 5,000 shekels footnote twice, and so I thought the spear was, I was looking at the same number of kilograms or pounds, even though it was a different number of shekels. But a shekel is a unit of weight like the kilogram and the pound, so it's always the same. So the spear did not weigh as much as the coat of mail. The coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. The spear weighed, I think, 25 pounds, something smaller anyway. And there came out women in dances to meet David after David defeated Goliath out of all the cities of Israel with timbrels and with rejoicing and with cymbals. And the women began the strain, that's a song, and said, Saul has smitten his thousands and David his 10,000s. And it seemed evil in the eyes of Saul concerning this matter. And he said to David, they have given 10,000s, and to me, they have given thousands. He wasn't too happy. Obviously, David was just a mere boy who'd slain Goliath, so that shouldn't be a reason, it would appear. But if you allow verses 1 through 5, it changes the whole meaning of this. And Saul was alarmed on account of David. And he removed him. We've skipped out three more verses, 9, 10, 11. And he removed him, Saul did, from him and made him a captain of 1,000 for himself. And he went out and came in before the people. And David was prudent in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. And Saul saw that he was very wise, and he was afraid of him. And all Israel and Judah loved David because he came in and went out before the people. And Melchol, the daughter of Saul, loved David. Here we skip three more verses about the other daughter of Saul. And David didn't get her as wife anyway, so it didn't matter. And it was, but those were verses that were not included in the Septuagint. And it was told Saul, and the thing was pleasing in his eyes, that his daughter Melchol, who's called Michal in the New World Translation, loved David. And Saul said, I will give her to him, and she shall be a stumbling block to him. Now the hand of the Philistines was against Saul. This is interesting, because this differs from the translation in the New World Translation, and probably many other translations too, but I haven't checked. But it says in some translations, I will give her to him I can't remember the exact wording, but the hand of the Philistines would come to be against David because of Saul's daughter. That's what it says, something like that. Whereas here it just says, now the hand of the Philistines was against Saul. It doesn't say anything particular about David. And Saul charged his servant, saying, speak ye privately to David, saying, behold, the king delights in thee, and all his servants love thee, and do thou become the king's son-in-law. And the servants of Saul spoke these words in the ears of David, and David said, is it a light thing in your eyes to become son-in-law to the king, whereas I am an humble man and not honorable? And the servants of Saul reported to him according to these words which David spoke. And Saul said, thus shall ye speak to David. The king wants no gift but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to avenge himself on the king's enemies. Now Saul thought to cast him into the hands of the Philistines. And the servants of Saul report these words to David. And David was well pleased to become the son-in-law to the king. And David arose and went, he and his men, and smote among the Philistines 100 men. And he brought their foreskins. And he becomes the king's son-in-law. And Saul gives him Melchol, or Michal, his daughter, to wife. And Saul saw that the Lord was with David, and that all Israel loved him. And he was yet more afraid of David. This is a beautifully concise version of it, because the other versions that include verse 30 are much more convoluted. And this reads really well. That's the other thing. It's the same with chapter 17. When we exclude the verses 12 through 30, 32, I think it is, 12 through 31, 12 through 31, it reads very smoothly in chapter 17 also, where Saul and all Israel were dismayed and greatly terrified in verse 11, and then we jump down to the original, apparently. And David said to Saul, "Let not, I pray thee, the heart of my Lord be dejected within him." So it's perfectly readable, and it's smooth with the exclusion of those disputed verses. So there's no reason that we need them at all. And it's the same thing with the end of this, that David put the head of Goliath in Jerusalem and put his armor in his own tent. And then there came out women and dances. It just reads smoothly and joins together smoothly without the other part. Now, you can read those other disputed verses yourself. No reason why you shouldn't. But you should know they are disputed. And our next reading, designated for today, is Jeremiah 22. In the reference version, this is what Jehovah has said. This is after the incident in verse 21. It was with Pasher, wasn't it? Yeah. Zedekiah sent Pasher to Jeremiah, right? And he also sent Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, to him. And because Nebuchadnezzar was attacking, he's attacking. The king of Babylon is at their doorstep, is what this is saying. This is what Jehovah has said now, chapter 22. We're using up a lot of time, even though we're moving along. This is what Jehovah has said. Go down to the house. This is Jeremiah chapter 22. Go down to the house of the king of Judah. And you must speak there this word. And you must say, "Hear the word of Jehovah, O king of Judah, who are sitting on the throne of David. You with your servants and your people. Those who are coming in through these gates. This is what Jehovah has said. Render justice and righteousness, and deliver the one that is being robbed out of the hand of the defrauder. And do not maltreat any alien resident, fatherless boy or widow. Do them no violence, and do not shed any innocent blood in this place. For if you will by all means perform this word, there will also certainly come in through the gates of this house the kings, sitting for David upon his throne, riding in chariots and on horses, he with his servants and his people. But if you will not obey these words, by myself I do swear, is the utterance of Jehovah." And Jehovah is the only one allowed to swear by himself, or nowadays Jesus said, don't swear at all. That means make an oath. We don't make oaths, but Jehovah does, or he did, is the utterance of Jehovah. By myself I do swear, if you will not obey these words, that this house will become a mere devastated place. For this is what Jehovah has said concerning the house of the king of Judah. You are as Gilead to me, the head of Lebanon. Assuredly, I shall make you a wilderness. As for the cities, not one will be inhabited. And I will sanctify against you those bringing ruin, each one and his weapons. And they must cut down the choicest of your cedars and cause them to fall into the fire. And many nations will actually pass along by this city and say one to the other, on what account did Jehovah do like this to this great city? And they will have to say, on account of the fact that they left the covenant of Jehovah their God, that's the Mosaic covenant, and proceeded to bow down to other gods and to serve other gods. Do not weep for the dead one, and do not sympathize with him, you people. Weep profusely for the one going away, for he will return no more, and he will actually not see the land of his relatives. So this is interesting. The one going away from Jerusalem. For this is what Jehovah has said concerning Shalom. The other name, another name for him is, that's Jehoahaz, in the Septuagint, it's Jehoahaz, who we know that was, he was the one who succeeded Josiah after Josiah was killed. He's the son of, one of the sons of Josiah. Shallum, the son of Josiah, concerning him, the king of Judah, who was reigning instead of Josiah, his father, who has gone forth from this place, he will return there no more. For in the place where they have taken him into exile, he will die, and this land he will see no more. Well, we already know that Zedekiah is king, so Shallum was king, or Jehoahaz. He was taken away. Jehoiakim was king, Jehoiakim. And then he was captured, and his son ruled, Jehoiakim. And then he was captured, and now Zedekiah is ruling, and all these things have already happened when this is being written. And yet this is writing about something already done. It's already done. Woe to the one building his house, but not with righteousness, verse 13, and his upper chambers, but not with justice, by use of his fellow man who serves for nothing, and whose wages he does not give him. The one saying, I'm going to build for myself a roomy house and commodious upper chambers, and my windows must be widened out for it. And the paneling will be with cedar and smeared with vermilion. That's the end of that quote. Woe to the one saying that, right? The one who is building his house, first of all, using his fellow man without paying wages, and also who says, I'm going to build for myself a roomy house, etc. Will you continue reigning because you were competing by use of cedar? As for your father, did he not eat? This is talking to the king of Judah. Did he not eat and drink and execute justice and righteousness? In that case, it went well with him. He pleaded the legal claim of the afflicted one and the poor one. In that case, it went well. Was not that a case of knowing me, is the utterance of Jehovah? Assuredly, your eyes and your heart are upon nothing but upon your unjust gain, and upon the blood of the innocent one in order to shed it, and upon defrauding, and upon extortion in order to carry them on. Therefore, this is what Jehovah has said concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah. That's the next king after Jehoahaz. They will not wail for him, alas, my brother, and alas, my sister. They will not wail for him, alas, O master, and alas, his dignity. With the burial of Ahias, he will be buried, with a dragging about and a throwing away out beyond the gates of Jerusalem. He's a king who's already also come and gone. Go up onto Lebanon and cry out, and on Bashan let your voice out, and cry out from Abarim. Verse 20, because all those intensely loving you have been broken. I spoke to you during your freedom from care. You said, I shall not obey. This has been your way since your youth, for you did not obey my voice. A wind will shepherd all your own shepherds. And as for those intensely loving you, they will go into captivity itself. So who's he talking to here? Still the king of Judah, apparently. For at that time you will be ashamed and certainly feel humiliated because of all your calamity. O you who are dwelling in Lebanon, being nested in the cedars, how you will certainly sigh when there come to you birth pangs, the labor pains like those of a woman giving birth. This is not clear to whom it's directed. You who are dwelling in Lebanon, is the king dwelling in Lebanon? Perhaps it could be considered near to Lebanon. As I am alive is the utterance of Jehovah, even if Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, that's Jehoiakim, also called Coniah, Jehoiakim with an N, the king of Judah, even if he happened to be the seal ring on my right hand. From there I would pull you off, and I will give you into the hand of those who are seeking for your soul, and into the hand of those of whom you are scared, and into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, also called Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and into the hand of the Chaldeans. And I will hurl you and your mother who gave you birth out into another land in which you people were not born, and there is where you will die. There is where you will die, right? I mean, these are things that have already happened. Jehoiakim is gone already out of this city of Jerusalem and into the land to which they will be lifting up their soul to return. There they will not return. Is this man Kaniah or Jehoiakim a mere form despised, dashed to pieces, or a vessel in which there is no delight? Why is it that he himself and his offspring must be hurled down and thrown into the land that they have not known? O earth, 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 hear the word of Jehovah. This is what Jehovah has said. Write down this man as childless. Apparently referring to Coniah, but possibly also Zedekiah, as an able-bodied man who will not have any success in his days. For from his offspring, not a single one will have any success, sitting upon the throne of David and ruling anymore in Judah. Well, we know that's the end of Jeremiah 22, but we know that was the end of the kingship when Zedekiah was finally defeated, that there was no king again. It wasn't until 1948 when Israel regained their autonomy as a nation, and which was a long time after, of course, 1948 in the Common Era, compared to this was during the time prior to the destruction of Jerusalem in 587 BCE. The final destruction, but initially there was a period, the initial exile took place while in 597 when Jehoiakim was there after his father had been defeated, and then of course he was captured by Nebuchadnezzar in 597, but the exile took place, the first exile, in 597, which was a good 10 years before the final destruction, which came in the days of Zedekiah, who is the king at this present time here when Jeremiah is prophesying. But Jeremiah is talking about the previous kings, as we saw. And there wouldn't be another king. That was going to be, Zedekiah was going to be the last king, and that's the end of Jeremiah 22. We have Colossians. We're running out of time. It's amazing how fast we use the time up. Colossians 4, you masters, keep dealing out what is righteous. This is Paul writing to the Colossians. You masters, keep dealing out what is righteous and what is fair to your slaves, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Be fair to your slaves. Be persevering in prayer, remaining awake in it with thanksgiving. At the same time, praying also for us, that God may open a door of utterance to us, to speak the sacred secret about the Christ, for which, in fact, I am in prison bonds, so that I shall make it manifest as I ought to speak. Go on walking in wisdom toward those on the outside, buying out the opportune time for yourselves. Let your utterance be always with graciousness, seasoned with salt, so as to know how you ought to give an answer to each one. All my affairs, Tychicus, my beloved brother and faithful minister and fellow slave in the Lord, will make known to you, for the very purpose of your knowing the things having to do with us, and that he may comfort your hearts. I'm sending him to you, along with Onesimus, my faithful and beloved brother, who is from among you. All the things here, they will make known to you. Aristarchus, my fellow captive, Aristarchus sends you his greetings, and so does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. Interesting that Mark is the cousin of Barnabas. That is something I don't think we saw before. Concerning whom you received commands to welcome him if ever he comes to you. That's John Mark. He's John who's surnamed Mark. And Jesus, who's called Justice, he's being of those circumcised. Only these are my fellow workers for the kingdom of God, and these fellow and these very ones have become a strengthening aid to me. Epaphras, who is from among you, a slave of Christ Jesus, sends you his greetings, always exerting himself in your behalf in his prayers, that you may finally stand complete and with firm conviction in all the will of God. I indeed bear him witness that he puts himself to great effort in behalf of you and of those at Laodicea and of those at Hierapolis. I think it's the pronunciation Hierapolis. Luke, the beloved physician, sends you his greetings, and so does Demas. Give my greetings to the brothers at Laodicea and to Nympha and to the congregation at her house. So we saw Luke was mentioned there, the beloved physician who wrote the book of Luke and the book of Acts. And when this letter, Paul continues, verse 16, has been read among you, arrange that it also be read in the congregation of the Laodiceans, that you also read the one from Laodicea. Also tell Archippus, keep watching the ministry which you accepted in the Lord, that you fulfill it. Here's my greeting, Paul's, in my own hand. Paul wrote his own letter here. That's interesting. Continue bearing my prison bonds in mind. The undeserved kindness be with you. So this is the conclusion of the book of Colossians that we've just done. Okay, and we've got 1 minute exactly at the time that I said that. Okay, so we're out of time again. It's remarkable how we use up the time so quickly. There's no time to talk about anything else, hardly. I know my arthritis returned a little bit again last night. I think I didn't take as much of the vitamin K2. I think that's... And also not as much vitamin D. But I'm being a little more cautious with vitamin D these days. And also some other minerals, the selenium and boron, I didn't take last night. So I'm not sure if that was why. But I've been trying to take the omegas, with cod liver oil and some 369 omegas and things like that, that I think may have also helped with the arthritis. I don't know what all the factors, the cofactors are that are needed, but I'm taking 8 grams of vitamin C per day right now, actually. Anyway, that pretty well concludes our video. It's November 18th, 2023. 20:00 hours Eastern Standard Time. What a mark. Ward Green, I love you very much, and in my behalf, this is Crow. And Cassie, my two watches, saying bye for now.